Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kawula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
With a little cock, Eddie.
I was going to say I missed it, but I didn't miss it at all.
How was the show last week?
It was fun. Just me and Dustin.
Just you. Who's Dustin?
Remember that guy that we overbooked? He sat in the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
So he was the guest or he was the co-host? Or
he was the guest slash co-host.
That's awesome.
And we just... we talked. It was actually probably one of the...
Don't say it.
Probably the best show we've ever done. No, it was different from what we... I mean, we talked a little bit about what he does and stuff, but we just kind of got into sports and politics and current events.
You missed my sound effects. Just go ahead and say it.
I missed them like I missed a punch in the balls.
Hey.
How was your thing?
Dude, my thing is great, by the way.
How was your little thing?
Just kidding.
So, how's your thing?
Last week, I missed the show because I reunited with a singing group that I had in college. And we sang the national anthem at the Lakers game. It was like over the top from beginning to end. I mean, first of all,
was it full there?
It was full.
Sold out
game against the Magic, which is kind of shocking.
I couldn't name a player on the Magic. I don't think
I didn't know one until I think.
Does Penny Hardaway still play on the Magic?
No, dude, he was great though. He was a great player.
That whole team,
yeah.
Shaq, Magic,
Penny,
Magic Johnson, Shaq's Magic.
So, dude, we ended up having courtside seats.
Did you see Jack? Was Jack there?
Who's Jack?
Nicholson.
Oh, dude, he was right. If he was there at the game, he was like 10 feet from us.
But you don't know if he was there.
He was not there.
Oh.
But we saw, do you know Djokovic, the number one tennis player?
No.
Djokovic?
I've heard the name, I think. That's
and then,
the right name. I've heard the name Djokovic before.
Ovechkin, you know the hockey player?
Yeah.
He was there. We got to meet him. We ended up
Alex
singing.
Ovechkin, he's a Washington Capitals.
Yeah. He's like one of the best players in the league.
He's the best player in the league right now.
That's what my friend said. I'm like, can you really
I'm
measure?
A Caps fan. I know. I follow
I didn't know that, really.
Ovi.
They're not doing great, though.
They're doing awesome. They're the best team in the league.
Never mind. I stand corrected.
the best team in the league.
I heard that somebody said they weren't doing that great.
The Caps?
Yeah.
No, the Caps are killing it this year.
Well, never mind. Oh, maybe I was talking about the Kings. The Kings are not doing great. But Kings are still like...
Kings just have to get into the final seed. And
I know
then
the
they can
Canucks
just, they can
are eating shit right now. Kings are doing all right. But I heard the Caps were not. But I don't pay attention to hockey until playoffs.
You should stop
paying
attention to all your friends.
That's true. But anyways, we did sound check while the Lakers were shooting around.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. For me, I'm a diehard Lakers fan.
Was Kobe hitting shots and shooting around?
He was actually injured, but he was at the game.
Oh, he didn't play?
So he didn't play.
Oh.
So I was a little bummed about that. But... He was injured and didn't play for another, like, two games. And then he played against the Cavs.
See Randall play?
I saw Randall play. The coolest part was, for me, like, growing up as a Lakers fan.
Swaggy P.
Swaggy P. I'm going to start calling you Swaggy E.
Swaggy E.
Was walking out on the court, seeing the Lakers logo.
Yeah, but that's not the same as the Great Western Forum.
Well, that was old school, too. But... they took a lot of, like, the floor from the Forum when they built the Staples Center.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. So a lot of it is actually still the iconic, you know,
oh,
Lakers.
Oh, that's cool. I
think
that.
Actually the Lakers logo is part of something in
that
the
would
Forum.
Be cool if they did that.
Yeah, they did something like that. So standing on that was amazing. Singing the national anthem for soundcheck while the Lakers were doing a shoot-around, that was intense. We ended up... getting dinner as well. So we got, you know, escorted to like this little overlook of the Staples Center. We had like this amazing dinner. And then they brought us back to our seats and we were in like, we're right there. I've never sat that close at any sporting event, to be honest. I've sat
close. Did you hear
close.
Were they yelling at you? Could you hear the shit talking?
You could hear everything.
You hear shit talking?
You could hear the shit talking. There was a
What's
a
some
highlight.
Good shit talking you heard?
Nah, everybody was just kind of like, pick up your man, like that kind of shit. Yeah. Like, you know, like, cussing, stuff like that. You don't hear that on
TV.
I want,
like, Gary Payton shit talking.
The craziest thing was one of the highlights was a windmill dunk in the game by the Magic by Gordon, who was at, he was the runner-up for the Slam Dunk Championship. And we were right at that basket when he did it. So it was like he was just, like, doing a windmill dunk, like, in our living room. It was insane. I've never seen a game like that. It was pretty over the top.
How'd you get it? How'd you get that gig?
So the Lakers have been playing one of my songs for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And the person who has been, you know, she coordinated it. I sent her an email. I'm like, I'm going to reunite my singing group from college, and we have this killer arrangement of the national anthem. She's like, yeah, send me a video. I'm like, great. So we got together, rehearsed, did a video, sent it to her, and she was like, this is great. Can you get this down to 90 seconds? I'm like, because it was 2 minutes. I said, yeah, we can just speed it up. No problem. So we get to the game.
You guys did a two-minute version of the
national anthem? Well, yeah. I mean, it's...
you guys embellished the
Well, there's, like, chords and harmony and cool stuff going on. But the crazy thing is...
Do you scat at all while you're doing
it? No, no scatting. There were some solos, but everybody kind of got featured. But we walk on the floor, and, you know, there's a little, like, mat that the players step on.
Yeah.
And I got to step on that. You know, like, little things like that, I'm like, oh, my God, this is so crazy.
That's cool.
Then, like, one of the Orlando Magic shot a ball... And, like, right before we're going on, ball just bounces right over to me. And the Orlando Magic, I'm, like, looking at him like, maybe I shouldn't do anything. The Orlando Magic player's like, hey, man, give me the ball. You know, like.
Oh, you get to pass it to him?
And so I, like, picked up the ball and I threw it and I was like, oh, my God, this is crazy.
You should have done a chest pass.
I wanted to shoot it, to be honest.
Fundamentals.
I really wanted to shoot it.
You should have shot and go, oh, man.
I was thinking about it because it was the Magic, too. Like, who cares, you know? But then they brought us on board. They introduced the group. And they turned down all the lights. And you just see, like, this spotlight on all of us. And the craziest thing about the whole thing was we couldn't hear ourselves at all because there's no
monitor. No monitor.
So you're just, like, singing in a huge, sounds like, it's like a 1,000-foot bathtub, you know, basically. You know, you're hearing nothing and everything at the same time. So we sing the national anthem, and everybody's, like, singing and listening to each other, doing the best we can. And you just start hearing people just cheering. Like, it's a very... You know, like, it'll get you excited about the national anthem, the arrangement, you know? Mm-hmm. And we ended up finishing, and it just exploded into this applause. I mean, it was like one of those unforgettable moments. Then afterwards, Jeannie Buss, the owner of the team, came and took pictures with us. We didn't know who she was at the time because it was like we were just caught in the hysteria of all of it. And then we ended up asking her again, like, hey, can we get a picture with our camera, you know, so we have a record of it? So we took pictures, and then we ended up... sitting there the whole game, we had VIP. We never had to wait in line for a bathroom, a drink, food, nothing.
That's the way to go to a game.
Yeah, it's the way to go to a game. And I've never been to a game like that where it's like everything. I mean, parking was taken care of, food was taken care of, everything. So it was just like one of the most magical experiences. I couldn't go to sleep that night.
Did you email back? Hey, I want to do that again next year.
Yeah. I was like, we're going to do this again. She's like, you guys were awesome. Everybody loved you. I mean, and that's the other thing. Jeannie Buss doesn't come over to every national anthem singer taking pictures. So she loved it. If she loved it, then we'll probably do playoff games when they get to the playoffs or, you know.
Well,
but the coolest thing
that could be a while.
Now the Dodgers want us to do it. So we're going to do it at a Dodger game.
Oh, nice.
The Kings want us to do it next season. They're booked for the rest of the season. And I'm going to try and get the Clippers, too. So I want to just do it at all the L.A. teams, and then we may do some San Diego
Rams.
Teams.
Got the L.A. Rams coming
up.
Yeah,
we'll do it there, too. But, I mean, it's such a fun way to see a game. And it's like you get the best.
Can I be the fifth member?
You can.
But
you
I got laryngitis that day, and that's why I can't sing. Right.
Dude, actually, I snuck a friend in. I was like, hey, man. One of the guys couldn't, you know, he couldn't stay for the game. So I snuck a friend in, and he ended up watching the whole game. Like, it was great. It was an amazing experience.
That's awesome.
I want to play... the whole national anthem. If you can.
It.
You
do
have it. I think you have the group. Do. So this is my a cappella group, All Right, singing the national anthem at the Laker game last Tuesday.
Oh.
The coolest thing. So, like, you know, the bass has a solo. The first tenor, who's got the highest voice, he's got a little solo. My solo is one word at the very end of the whole song. So, like, once we're getting to that, like, last point of the song, I was like, this is my only chance right now, up to this 37 years of my life, to hear my whole voice fill this room in complete, you know, just quiet silence. So I just, like, belted that out, and it was just like, man, the whole place just, nice. It was amazing.
You
like,
should have started beatboxing.
Yeah, that would have been a great time. Next time. You know what was so funny? Like, just to make sure we weren't going to, like, just fail at this, dude, you know how I did to, like, pump myself up? I watched, like, the 10 worst renditions of the National Anthem. Oh, my God. Dude, there are some horrendous renditions of
that. I don't
know
much about music and singing, but I know that is a hard song to sing.
It is. I actually have done
it. It's one of the more difficult songs
when I was in college, I actually did it solo at an LA Galaxy game at the Rose Bowl. And that was amazing, except they didn't tell me that in the Rockets' red glare, they're firing rockets behind me.
So you got scared.
So, like, I mean, I sang the whole song, but there's this one picture of me just, like, with my eyes just out. Like, I was, like, not expecting that at all. But it was the hardest song I've ever sung.
Yeah,
like,
I heard it's a very difficult
because song. Because the range, you go so low, and then you end up going so high. You know what I mean? But doing it with this group, it's like, man, it's so fun. Like,
you can just pass off the hard parts.
Yeah, well, that's what we had a new guy sing with us for the high part. But the coolest thing is, like, you know, all these guys, we'd been singing for so long, and all I wanted to do when I was singing with them was be in a band. And now that I've done so much for the band, I was like, I miss singing with these guys.
Like, screw the band. I just want to sing a cappella.
No, I mean, I like both. I mean, I really do. But it made me, like, really, it was great to reconnect with them. And then to reconnect in such a, like, insane way.
Yeah,
like,
that's awesome.
Hey, guys, our first gig back after 15 years is singing with the Laker game.
That's awesome. Just nowhere, like, to go but down.
Nowhere to go but down. Nowhere to go but down. And we all wore Laker jerseys. We all wore the number Kobe.
I saw that.
Not the number Kobe, but the 24. Number Kobe. Anyways, it was a lot of fun, and
I have a James Worthy jersey. You should ask,
dude. Me. You're a James Worthy fan?
When I was a kid, I was a huge, like, you know, Showtime Lakers
dude,
fan.
Good man.
Not anymore,
dude. But Lakers Worthy, Kareem. I mean, that was
no. I Worthy was my favorite basketball player growing up.
James dude, Worthy. You know what's crazy? I got a funny story. So I'm getting on a plane. This is after the Lakers are playing my song and everything. James Worthy was on my flight.
Yeah,
and I just bought, like, a Lakers thing, like a Lakers commemorative decade of basketball that was sitting in my backpack, and I was just sitting there the whole time, like, I gotta ask him to sign this, but I never did.
Oh, you should have.
I should have, because we were on a plane, but I was
he's my favorite.
But you know what? When he's in first class and you're in coach, it was like, there's already a divide. Yeah, I don't want to be that stalker. And I didn't want to just stand in the aisle and be like, will you sign this?
James Worthy. You should have gone, Magic Johnson, I love you.
Oh, that would have been terrible. Terrible. But anyways, I think our special guest has arrived. Mr. Alfred Reuben Thompson, say hello. Whoa. You got to say it one more time because our studio...
Don't mess up his voice with that crappy sound effect.
Hold on just a second. Mr. Alfred Reuben Thompson, say hello.
Hey, how's it going? How's it going out there?
Man.
He just cuts through you like a hot butter knife.
I know. Dude, you know what? When you were talking and Eddie first heard your voice, he kind of gave you
a
look.
A little scared.
A little nervous.
A little nervous.
Just a little bit. All right, that's cool.
It sounds like Darth Vader if you close your eyes and you just look. Oh, okay,
dude, you need to do our segues instead of that guy that whoever's doing our introductions at the top of the show. We need to have this guy do the introductions.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh,
so awesome.
That's done.
Eddie has a crush.
Did you come out of the womb with that voice, or like when did it hit?
It changed when I was like 13.
What?
Yeah, all really? At once.
All then, just like overnight, right, you woke overnight. Up and...
One night I was high-pitched, 13, and the next morning I was bass.
Wow, that is amazing.
Scared my mother.
I would, dude. Yeah, I would imagine.
Scared my mother to death.
It's like, you're possessed.
She was like, who is this man in my house?
And you're like,
man.
It's me.
That is a man's voice.
It's me, mom.
That is the manliest man's voice.
It's your son.
Dude, first of all, let's introduce Alfred as what he does.
What this, he is.
Who he is a voiceover and actor, correct?
Oh, yeah. Voiceover, actor, talent, extraordinaire.
Dude, you need to be our third voice on this show, man. It's like, I just feel cool when you talk.
So good. So
thank
good.
Thank you, bro.
All right, let's go way back. You're 13 years old. Your voice changes. Yeah. You have this voice. When was the moment you were like, I have a $1 million voice that I need to share with the world. How could I do this?
I don't know. I think it was years later. You know, I'm born and raised in New York City in Hollis, Queens. And it was just, you know, being born and raised in Hollis, I mean, you grew up with the likes of Russell Simmons, Run-DMC, and Irv Gotti and Josh. So they were all into music, and at one time I was too. But later on, I just got into acting and voiceover work. I was asked to do several voiceover commercials for different corporations, and the next thing you know, a theater play, playing the voice of God. Like, how cool is that?
I can't
that
see
is awesome!
Cool, I can't see
cool
that.
How cool is you get asked to play the voice of God?
Do you remember any lines from that show?
I'm God.
Oh, yeah, it's like, Adam, has thou forsaken me?
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
So it's like, you know, from there.
Yeah, if you can play God, you can play anybody.
It's all downhill from there.
It's all downhill from there.
That's like the top of the key. So right after that, I started doing more feature films and more voiceover commercials than on-camera commercials. So the talent just started growing. That's when I recognized. I was like, wait a minute. I got something here. Hold up.
That's amazing.
Dude, so, you have a very distinguishable sound and timbre to your voice. Just your speaking voice, it's like...
My ears vibrate.
Yeah. It's true. Ooh, you shake the room.
Yeah.
But you know it, too. You're like...
Tickles. Oh, yeah. It tickles. So, but you, I'm sure when you get cast in things, you end up playing the heavy, right? I mean, just naturally.
Yeah,
because...
just naturally, just the heavy. You know, when I walk in the audition room and then I go over lines... Most of the casting directors and producers and directors are like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
You know, but it's more than that. It's just, you know, you got to bring your acting chops.
Yeah, of course, Because,
you know, your characters that you have to, you know.
Can't just bring the voice.
Yeah. You just brought the voice. They'll be like, yeah, you sound great.
Yeah.
But.
you deliver lines like an idiot.
But you know you can lead with that. You can kick the door down with just your voice.
Yeah.
Do you get tired of having to play the heavy? Or would you like to try to play other? I mean, is that what you normally get cast as? Or would you rather be?
I normally get cast as the heavy. Depending on what it is.
Well, explain that real quick. I've never even heard of that, like, the heavy.
The heavy can be, like, supporting a lead in a film or...
The big badass.
The big bad guy.
The heavy is the big badass.
Okay, yeah. I never knew that.
But it's funny because in my early part of my career, I got casted as, like, the big boss, the mafia big boss guy. But never, like, the bodyguard.
Really?
I never, ever play a bodyguard.
Hmm.
And that's odd because... I'm a bodyguard type.
I mean, with the shaved head and the voice, it's like you just think.
So you would think they would, you know, cast me as a bodyguard, but never. So it's always a heavy until, you know, it gets to a comedic role or something.
Yeah.
You know, that way I'll just play like.
Go against type.
Yeah. Always.
Did you say go against type? You guys are speaking a language here. I love
it. No, he's like, he's the heavy. So he walks in the room, people are like, okay, he's the bad guy. He's the big badass.
The villain. But you like being the villain?
That's his type.
You know, I like being a villain, but I'm getting more roles opposite of being a villain now.
That's against type.
So
casting him as like
God.
Like to watch him come in and play like a little meek character with that voice and his stature.
It would never work.
People are like, that's like, oh, it would work. It's against type, and it's like it's a different.
Okay, I see.
So you're saying that's against type.
Yeah, depending on the character and the role, you know, you can always play like the big guy teddy bear kind of guy, you know.
Right.
And then, you know, of course, that character goes well, but then you can't stay there because you get typecast.
Yeah,
teddy bear guy. So you got to move around a little bit. You know, if you stay just playing the big, burly guy who's the boss, you know, aggravated and angry all the time, then that's just what you'll get casted as. So.
Which is, you know, it's work.
Yeah, it's work is
you're
work.
You're working.
Yeah, work is work. I love working.
He's like, work is work. That's awesome. Man, that's amazing. Do you do a lot of animated stuff?
I'm
already thinking, like, man, this guy should
be. Yeah, I know. I've done some animated stuff, but more independent projects. You know, the voiceover world is just a different world altogether. It's like, you know, it's like its own mini group.
Yeah, it's hard to break into
that. Because
they
have their own teams, their own producers, their own casting directors, their own directors. So it's separate, and the departments are all separate from animation. So that's another world of its own, and then they have people that just specialize in that.
And now it's like, gotten to the point now with animation, it's gotten to the point where they're using celebrity voices now on everything, so that cuts the work down for the voiceover actor.
Which is
kind of annoying, because it's like sometimes the actors aren't
because
they're not really colorful, you know what I mean?
And they're doing something put on the poster, you know, Brad Pitt is in this cartoon, but it's just something put his name on the poster. But you don't really need to hear Brad Pitt's voice. That doesn't bring anything to that character.
And kids don't really care.
You know what I mean? But it's a marketing thing. You know, more. I think more than anything, to have those celebrities doing the voice.
Well, there's some voices that it's like, ooh, this does not work for an animated character.
Yeah. I mean, some people's voices work perfectly. Like a Joe Pesci works perfect for an animated character. Yeah, but like, you do like a regular lead, like a Brad Pitt or something, it's just kind of like, well, what's the point?
Yeah, well, you know, I never would have expected Tim Allen's voice to be great for animation.
Tom Hanks.
Wow.
But he was great. Yeah, he was great. He was great. Same with Tom Hanks. Like, I love Tom Hanks, but I didn't expect those voices to be so badass in an animated movie, you know? Like James Earl Jones, like in Lion King, you just like, man.
Well, you know what it is? It's just that the acting and the talent is from your voice. It's not more so on camera where you get to do different things, face reactions.
Yeah, you got to express all emotions.
Everything's in your voice, so how you express the lines is how people feel when they receive it, when they're watching it or listening to it. So it's just like, it's a distinctive voice, like you said, Brad Pitt. You could hear Brad Pitt and know it's him and not even see him.
Yeah,
right.
You know, because you've memorized his mannerisms, his movements, you know, how he acts in a film. So immediately, as soon as you hear his voice, you're like, oh, okay, that's Brad. I know that.
Yeah,
so like, I would hear pizza commercials and be like, oh, that's Queen Latifah. I'm like, yeah, that's Queen. Yeah, I could tell him, like, close my eyes and just tell who it is, like, regularly. So,
well, let me ask you this. Like, who was an inspiration for you to do voiceover work?
James Earl Jones definitely is one of them.
I don't get that. I don't see that.
He is.
I don't see that at all. I don't know where you got that from.
Have you done Darth Vader ever?
No, I've never done Darth Vader. Because he's, like, the iconic of Star Wars and Darth Vader series. So, that's a great thing. But, you know, time is moved on. Isaac Hayes was definitely a big influence, and other voiceover base actors. Michael Clark Duncan, oh gosh,
he was great.
He did a lot of animated too that a lot of people didn't know about before he passed. So yeah, and now, you know, Alfred Reuben Thompson.
That's right. You're moving on in. Like, I'll take his work, please, and more.
Well, there's definitely a void there. So
that's true.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Can't even get close. Yeah. Did you, so you said you grew up in Queens.
Yeah, born and raised in Queens. You know, New York City's New York. I love New York. I love the pizza. I love the food. Gotta name pizza when you name New York.
And you gotta miss the pizza out here. There's ain't nothing like New York pizza.
Well, the Village on Largemont.
That's my favorite pizza place.
I know I'm giving them the big ups right now, but they have, like, the greatest pizza.
Is that where you took me?
Yep, that's where I took you.
And they're originally a New York City pizzeria. The owners are from Brooklyn.
Yep.
Delicious. So
that's the closest that I've had.
The closest
I've
had in LA to like New York tasting pizza. Mm. But, you know, New York City, came out to California, you know, pursuing active also work, and I've just been consistent, so the work is good. And
that's awesome.
I'm blessed. I thank God for it every day, you know.
Well, you got a voice that's just like,
you thank yourself, and then you go, thank you, God, and you go, you're welcome. You just say that to yourself. That's what God sounds like.
Oh, wow. No, I thank him, and then, of course.
then just secretly you go, you're welcome, just to hear it.
God's like, your voice is lower than mine.
It's like, you sound better than me. You're a better God than me. I'm going to have you do all my work.
That's crazy. So how long ago did you move to L.A. from New York?
Wow. That's years ago now. Can't tell my age either.
And were you doing it? No, that's okay. You don't have to tell anybody your age.
Well, no one thinks you're 18 with that voice. So
that's a little easy on down the road.
He was 13. I mean,
no, he was 13 with that voice. That's true.
he's 16 now, right?
Yeah, 16 going on 17.
You're 13. The people called your house. You answered, and you're like, "Hi, is Mr.
Oh yeah,
Dave. Definite. I thought you were your dad.
Yeah, definite. Because you know, I got a whole bunch of sisters, so their friends would call the house, and I'm like, "Hello," and they're like, oh, wow. How are you doing?
How you doing?
I'm okay. Who are you calling for? I was calling for Cindy. Now I'm just going to call for you.
Now I'm a little worried.
You got a date. You know. Show up. Oh, you're 13?
Yeah. Those are the times that were funny, though. More than anything, you know, just having those moments.
That's hilarious.
Those times as a kid growing up with a deep voice, but then when you become a man, everybody's like, you know, you're the voice in the room.
As soon
as you speak, everybody's paying attention, so.
Commands a lot of power.
You got to have something to say.
What's been one of the most like challenging roles or things that you've done that may have been something you weren't expecting to get for voiceover work? Or any work, really?
I got to say, I shot a film, an HBO film, Hemingway and Gjelhorn with Clive Owen and Nicole Kidman. And I was shocked. I was sitting in the box seats at the Staples Center watching the Kings game. And I got the call.
That's awesome. I think
that had to be like the most historic moment in my life. And of course, while we were on set shooting, it was my birthday, last day I had to shoot.
Oh, man.
And we were in San Francisco shooting, and everybody just, it came out with a cake, and everybody sung happy birthday.
That's awesome.
And I was like, wow, really? Really? I'm looking at Clive and Nicole, and I'm like, thank you.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
It was amazing. I was like, wow. That was like a classic moment in my life.
That's really incredible.
And the role, of course, was great. You know, great director.
Like, the cake was phenomenal. The role was all right.
The cake was good. Cake was good. And it's like they secretly made it on the spot. It wasn't like ordered from Rouse or something like that.
That's awesome.
Grocery stores. Like, it came out like the real homemade cake mom would make.
Nice.
Spoon around it kind of thing.
Big giant yellow cake with chocolate frosting.
Yeah. Speaking my language.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's insane. So, yeah,
that had to be one of the most historic. One of the most funny times, though, is when The Office was on and I shot an episode with Will Ferrell. And we were shooting, and in between takes, you know, Will was like, you're not laughing. You know, Will's a funny guy.
Yeah.
I just told him, I said, you don't know how hard I'm chewing the inside of my jaw in order to hold me not to laugh.
He was like, God?
You were just like...
He's probably upset. Like, why are you laughing? I'm not funny. Like,
I was like, I got to hold the straight face. So... That was a funny moment we all put.
Yeah, it hurts comedians that. When they can't crack people up on set.
Yeah, and then they work hard at doing it.
Yeah.
And it's like he intentionally would start doing different things and improving different lines, and I just had to hold a straight face. Yeah,
they want to try to crack you up.
Eddie's a stand-up comedian.
He's yeah.
Terrific touring comedian.
Oh, yeah.
So he speaks the truth. He speaks the truth, man.
Well, like, it was like Rodney Dangerfield did Caddyshack. That was his first film.
Oh, my gosh.
And he was... He thought he was doing terrible because no one was laughing. Like, after the takes, people would be like, he'd be like, no one's laughing. Well, I suck at acting. And they're all like, no, if they laugh, they'll ruin the take. Like, he thought he was doing a terrible job because no one was laughing during the take. And then, like, so they had to explain to him, like, no, that's not how you shoot movies. You can't laugh during the take.
Yeah, that's right.
But, like, it screws with you psychologically. If you can't get someone to crack up as a comic, you're like,
what
it messes with you psychologically.
That's like the big payoff, right? That's the big payoff. That's crazy. Well, let's play some of your reel. Do you mind us playing your reel?
Yeah, of course. Not a problem. Not a problem.
Eddie, you should have it on there.
I do.
All right, let's do it. Alfred Reuben Thompson, here it goes.
All right. I'll call you. What's going on?
This kid can code, man.
Hey. Now remember, don't touch the money. Just grab the jewelry.
Got it.
Who you taking with you?
I take, Gary and Sean with me.
Gary? The guy with the Fonzie hairstyle. I don't like him.
You can trust him, though, man. I trust him.
Okay, now you remember the signal. Two phone calls, hang up. Then I call you. We'll meet at our regular place.
Okay.
The lawyers say why?
Guess the judge wants to get out ahead of all the bad press been falling on my club.
Ain't easy pulling a jury that had been exposed through all that shit, man.
Yeah, I know.
Boyd Crowder, daddy was Bo, dead. Brother named Bowman, also dead. And if I may say so, Boyd done a lot of things to leave me right surprised he's sitting here.
Is a beacon of freedom. Welcome to the United States of America.
That's your wife?
Pretty great country, huh?
The biggest good decision of your life. It's either gonna be the best thing you ever did, or the worst thing you ever did. Time to spin the chamber, Boris. By signing up for another year.
Anything you need, day or night, I will be the one to take your call.
Keep talking.
There we go.
That was awesome. I was caught in suspense.
I wanted more.
I did too.
Even though he could talk right now and do the same thing.
So, you know what? Just walk our listeners through, you know, what each scene was. You remember all the scenes that you obviously have
course,
on there?
Yeah, of course, the first scene was Abstraction, a feature film. And I was discussing a deal that I wanted one of my guys to do. And I was giving him the information and, you know, what to take, what not to take. Kind of leading them through it. But, of course, in the film, they double-cross me. And they're on the chase. And
don't do that.
Now. So, yeah, you double-crossed the wrong guy.
Don't do that.
The wrong guy.
That voice.
And okay, and then the other episode was Justified, great show that was on FX. I played one of the henchmen, and you know, of course, in that show, everybody's a bad guy.
Almost, yeah.
You know, so I played one of the henchmen guys, explaining to everybody else who that person was when they didn't know we had information on them. So, and that was
good stuff.
That was good. Then the other one was The Office with Will Ferrell, and he was discussing with me, Mr. Boris, trying to get me to buy back into Dunler and Mifflin, the company for The Office, and I wasn't going for it. Kind of, I just didn't want the business back. So, and he was like force feeding me the paperwork. It was just like so hilarious. And the other one was Modern Family with Ed O'Neill. And oh my gosh, Ed O'Neill, great guy.
Yeah.
I could tell you, great, great, great guy. I know the day I shot on set, everybody was like, you know, because Sophia's on the show.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, wow, you're going to be, you know, you're going to see Sophia. I was like, yeah, that's great. Al Bundy's
going to work with Al Bundy.
Ed O'Neill's going to be there. Right. So, you know, it was great. And both of them are great actors. And it was great to work with them that day. And it just was a good thing. So
that's a solid show, too. It's been consistent.
Like, yeah. Everywhere.
It's to me, like, one of the things I like about Modern Family, too, it's like, I like dry humor, but that's like really done. It's done really well.
It's done well.
Dances on that line of slapstick and being dry too, which I love. You know, sometimes dry comedy can be too dry for me, but
that's one of the most best.
It's the best comedies that you know. It's been running for years.
Yeah, the writing on that show is great. It's like one of the top writer shows.
I was just thinking, I'm like Eddie and Alfred could be the next Lethal Weapon, dude.
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
Let's do that.
Seriously. Cast these guys together.
Danny Glover.
Dude, seriously.
And the new Mel.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I always thought of myself as a Mel Gibson type.
Oh, yeah. We could kill it.
Hey, dude, you never know. I was like, what is happening here?
We totally need to go to Warner Brothers. We totally need to go to Warner Brothers.
Make it happen. Let's
get it. Joe Silver, we're here. Call right now.
Like, who are you guys? What's going on?
Just call right now.
How'd you get in here?
What's the strangest job you've ever done? For like a voiceover, like, you know, somebody asks you to do something, you're like, well, that is strange. Okay, yes, I'll do it.
I was offered to do like a hot sex line.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
I was like, yes. Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
No.
I was like, I can't do a hot sex line. And then they told me how much they paid.
What are they paying? What's their number?
I literally just turned it down. I turned it down. I gotta have some morals. Plus, you know,
see, I have none.
Of course, my girlfriend at the time would have knew it was me, and God forbid she would have called the line.
Did she call the lines? How would she ever find out? Because you can get her as soon as she goes. Did you do phone sex? I'm like, are you calling phone sex?
You.
That's the end of Alfred. Right? And you guys have been like, we are horrible together.
Yeah, baby. We could take it one step further.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Hello? Carol? Carol, what are you doing calling this number?
What are you doing talking on this? Oh, it'd be perfect.
That's crazy. Have you ever done an audition where they just have you send in something that you record?
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's most, all the time. A lot of voiceover auditions.
Yeah, a lot of voiceover auditions.
That's like, the beauty of it, because you can just do it at home and send it in.
That's it. You could just act crazy at home in your pajamas.
That's awesome.
Just send them off what they want.
But every voiceover
is different. Like, all commercials different. Animation's different. So it's really depending on what they're looking for at the time. You know, because advertising is totally different when it comes to selling a product. So, you know, you have to sell that product. Not every product needs a, oh, yeah, voice.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Every product really does need a voice.
If they don't even know they need it.
You just got to say, can you do us a favor? Can you just say, wake up, Hollywood.
Wake up, Hollywood. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to cut that out,
That should just be the entrance.
My agent's number is 310-894.
We're a nonprofit over here. Is there a big difference? I don't know much about the voiceover world, but like between regular commercial voiceover and like radio? Do you do radio commercials or?
Radio commercials are similar. Just depending on what the product is and what they want.
Okay. Is it the same sort of like submission process with agents and like?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it's the same submission process. But you could also do submissions on your own.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much work out there right now because of internet.
Yeah.
All the numbers going around. I mean, Social Network, the band's going around. Everything is big now for it. So everybody's needing more voiceovers.
I would imagine, like, the anime, like, scene would be huge for you.
Oh, my goodness. It would be huge. But, my gosh, you know, Don Fontaine, he was, like, king of voiceovers. He's, like, in the 80s and 90s, probably half of the 2000s, he passed away not too long ago. He did a whole lot of voiceover for all the big network shows and all the motion pictures back out in the 90s and 2000s and some of the 80s. Mm. And, you know, they have specific people for those trailers and for those promo spots and for those animation spots, you know. And as we discussed before, now they're picking up big name talent, you know, because they're figuring that they could sell more.
Well, just the name brand.
With the name brand attached to the name. So. Yeah. And then if you noticed, I've noticed this, they'll use the voice, and what they'll do, they'll have the animators create the face like to be just like the actor.
Yeah.
So I've you would see some similarity. So it'd be like a calling card to say, oh my gosh, he looks just like,
right,
and she looks just like.
Well, just like, I noticed that, like, they did that a lot in that Pixar movie, Wreck-It Ralph. Like, because Sarah Silverman's character that looked like that little girl.
Looked just.
And then Wreck-It Ralph.
Well, they put those little things, right, on them. That's the sensors, right?
Yeah.
On their faces.
Yeah, but like, they, you know, they,
and they even animated them to look like him?
I don't know if they did it as far as mocap with them all, but I know that, like, the animation looked a lot like the people that are the celebrities that were voicing the character.
Of course. Then they'll have them come in and do smiling faces and things and capture and record them and then CGI them in. And, then there you go. They're the fish.
That's awesome.
Like that, you know. Yeah. So I figured they're doing a lot of that now.
Yeah.
You know? And what about video games? Do you ever get the chance to do video games?
I'm scoring for that right now. I'm like aiming at the video game world right
now. That'd be huge. It's so huge.
I've been attending the LA convention of the video game E3.
Yeah.
For the last 2 years, and it's huge.
So you just go in there and just start talking as loud as you can?
Oh, yeah. I just go in there, and everybody has to know me. Like, you have to know.
I played the E3 conference a couple years ago, and it was like, I'd never seen anything like it. There was a band that opened for us, and this is the strangest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
They all played instruments that were made of video games.
Wow.
Like, video consoles or video games. Everything was made from,
really?
Like, it was like, man, that conference is really mind-blowing for gamers or anybody that's, like, you know, way
and
into that
you scene. Could get caught up. Like, I'm there pitching and shopping out for voiceover work for, you know, different video games. Because, you know, the video
that's
games
smart.
Are different now. It's like their series now.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you get attached to one, you're in the next seven.
Yeah.
You know, especially if your character stays alive through the whole trial. So, you know, the thing about it is you can get caught up in those video games. I mean, you're there pitching, but at the same time, you're watching all these big video, and they're letting you test them out, you know. So you're testing out video games, and you wake up, and it's like 4 hours later. Nintendo's gone. I'm like, where's Nintendo? I got to pitch my work. You were playing a Sony game. That's why. You didn't play a Nintendo game. So now I'm stuck, and I'm like, Sony, I need a job.
Yeah. But you should be just, if I were you, I'd just be throwing my voice everywhere in that conference. You know?
Everywhere.
Just, no, I really.
Just walk in with a megaphone. Just start talking. Just start talking. This is God.
Let
hire
the work
me.
Come to you. This is God. Exactly.
That's what I would do. If I had that voice, oh.
Man, that's crazy. Now, you also do some acting. Like, was what was first? Was voiceover work first for you, or was acting first for you?
I would say the voiceover, but I only did like two or three voiceovers, you know. And then, of course, I went into acting.
And how was that transition? Like,
transition is totally different, you know, because, like I said, in voice acting, it's your voice. So you're projecting all your lines and certain, you know, phrases of certain words. But acting, you're on camera, you know, and then you're in front of like 200 production staff. And it's you and one other person in the scene. So everybody's just standing there, and it's like, you don't rush. You go through great scenes, great cuts, but everybody's still waiting on you because the day has to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, so memorization of lines, certain techniques you have to have, certain things you do to prepare for certain roles.
Yeah, voiceover, you can run it three times.
You can run
it
three, 4 times.
Clip out the parts that way. But
acting, it's like you've got to hit them. You got to hit your beats. You got to hit your lines. Your memorization has to be on point. Even your eye contact, you know, has to be strong with your offset character.
There's got to be chemistry there, too.
Oh, always. You know, if you got a love interest, but you're the bad guy, you're just MFing everybody.
Yeah.
So it's something I was just thinking about, like, because your voice is so low.
Yeah.
Like, projecting is going to be different for you than everybody else.
Oh, totally.
So, like, the way somebody has to mic you is going to be different in, like, a TV scene or, totally. You know, like for example, you did a scene with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Like, your mic and your sound mixing just for your voice is going to be completely night and day.
It's totally different.
What was the, like, this is kind of me being a nerd, but what was kind of, like, the mic placement? How was it different for you, or what was the... What was the recording of your voice? How was it different than his?
I could tell you. Way different. You know, the mic sound people, they hook you up. You know, you get right. Your mic set up. But then when you're talking, they're just asking for cues. Like, I want to get a cue on you. And they're like, you know, can you, like, back up from the mic? I'm like, but you put it on my shirt. I can't back off the mic. He said, but you're going in the red. I was like, well, let's put the mic in another place.
Right.
So,
put the mic on the other actor.
So, you know, from there, just you know, you get a different, total different sound. But I know I just did an ADR last week for a film, Code 8. Sung Chang, he was in all the Fast and the Furious series. I think he stopped at number 6 or 7. And we just did a film, but I had to go in and do ADR last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just running so many lines, and I was thinking to myself, I was like, wow, how did they, like, not catch all the lines?
They must have seriously effed up.
And I was like, they had to lower it because it was so much in the red.
Right.
That they had to.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that as you're talking.
They couldn't tell that on set when the mixer couldn't.
I'm pretty sure they could tell, but at the same time, you know, they're like,
can't do anything.
We literally have to keep going. We're running tape.
They were just so like immersed in the sound of God that they just forgot.
Yeah, like, they're just trans.
Like this guy.
So yeah, I mean, you know, voice acting and acting is two different worlds. I enjoy both. You know,
you have any preference? Because sometimes people have preferences.
I don't know. I love working.
Yeah, working's the most
important. I love
working.
But the thing about it is too is that, you know, it's, you want challenging characters, challenging roles. And the same thing with voiceover, you want challenging characters, challenging roles. You can't be too challenging when it comes to selling a box of tissues for an ad, for a commercial spot. But when you get a character, you could just make it your own, whether it's a voice or whatever.
Well, you find it difficult for, especially with you bringing that voice in and your stature and all that stuff, and trying to bring something different to a character, because when someone casts you, they're looking for, like we said earlier, a specific type.
Yeah.
And when you try to do something different, is, do you find, like, people putting resisting that, or are they cool with it, or?
I don't know. You know, I think as an actor, when he could be more creative and the director sees the creativity.
Right.
And then he lets you become you in that character.
Yeah, I mean, a good director, you would hope, would do that. Not just like, hey, I heard this one-dimensional voice.
Yeah.
I want this character to just be one-dimensional. Like, you want a full character.
And, of course, you know, they let you take at least 2 or 3 takes.
Yeah.
But, you know, out of one of the takes, they'll say, okay, make it your own.
Right.
And a lot of times when I'm making my own, they're like, okay, we're going to use that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're going to use that. I remember when I shot Marry Me.
Yeah.
Show that used to be on NBC. We're going through lines. We're running lines. And, of course, you know, we got the script. But then we ran lines on the improv. And they were like, that's what we want. Director and producer came out and said, that's what we want.
Yeah.
Forget what we wrote down.
Because they don't know what they want until they hear or see it.
We want that.
Yeah.
So it's the ability of the talent.
You
know, you have to act in that moment.
Yeah. Well, I would just think that would be an obstacle for you, just bringing what you bring to the table. People just tend to just see that, and that's all they see.
That's all they see. No, but, well, maybe because, I don't know, you know, when you're, like you said, you know, you have voice and stature, but then when you've done a lot of comedy and you've switched over.
Yeah, as soon as you start doing the part, people are like, oh, there's more to this guy than this voice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's just hard to, I mean, it's a great thing to get you in the door, but then to show what you can do once you get in the door.
And then that's it. That's like, they see and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Good. Cast them. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll tell you later.
Yeah.
We'll tell you
later. Cast them right now.
I'm ready for Lead the Weapon. Seriously. You guys are already a team.
Can you see it?
Yeah, can you see it? Totally.
Can you see it? Like,
you got to say a line like, I'm getting too old for this shit.
I'm getting too old for this shit.
That's awesome. Perfect.
And Mel.
So awesome.
Mel.
So now, I met Alfred at the Fox lot, you know, and like I heard him. I think I asked him a question or something. He opened his mouth, and I'm like, this guy's got a story.
And you just, like, you just got
you
wet.
Just hear the voice. You're like, dude, this guy's a story. And I'm like, what do you do? And he's like, I'm a voiceover actor. And I do this. And I'm like, man, I got to get you on the show because, man, it's just, you can just tell there's depth of sound and you have a story behind it, right?
Thank you.
Know?
Thank
that's like one of the things that we love to do is like showcase. We're showcasing you on this show.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? We want you out there getting more and more work.
Okay. We're,
so let me ask you a question.
Big shout out to Joel Silverman, the producer. Big shout out to Steven Spielberg. Big shout out to Brett Ratner.
Has anybody
They're all listening. They're all listening.
Working.
Has anybody ever like tweaked your voice with something that you've done?
Wow. No, I've never had my voice tweaked ever.
Usually. Well, you know, like for like, I have a friend that's done some Transformer stuff, John Crotz, who's been guest.
Yeah.
And he said, like, he would do a character and then they would put it through.
Well, they had to make it sound like a robot.
Yeah, they made it sound like a robot. So, like, your voice, I would think, would be perfect for, like, a villain of a Transformer or, you know what I mean? Like, some kind of, like, machine.
Michael Bay, hope you're listening. Michael Bay.
You never know. You never know.
You don't want to be in the Transformer movies. They're terrible.
Now they really are.
But they pay
first
well.
One was all right.
I didn't say that, Michael Bay. Michael Bay,
he didn't
I
say
didn't
that.
Say that.
I said that. The one without the career said that.
So, do you do a lot of foreign work, too? International work?
Looking forward to doing more international work. I have some managers and agents over in Australia. So, that's going well. We're like marketing myself out there right now. You know, it's a different audience, total different audience out there. And of course, their film selectives are different. And then, of course, when it comes to U.S. Films, they only get to see, of course, whether the film festival is shown or what the big motion picture studios are showing. Right. So we're trying to put me in that kind of.
There's
area
like a whole market. That whole international market is so different. Like
it's
Bruce
totally
Willis
different.
Still has a career because of the international
yes,
market.
Yes, that's right.
You know,
that's right.
His movies domestically don't do very well, but like in China,
he's yeah, they're still viewing Die Hard.
That's why the last Transformers movie was shot in China for the international market.
Yeah,
I didn't know that either.
Yeah,
the one with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah,
that
that's why it all took place in China, or was it Japan? Japan or China? I forget. But it was because of the international market of these big blockbuster movies. Because domestically, they don't do as well as they do over there.
Wow. And now that they have streaming online, I mean, everything's it's huge.
Yeah,
you know, all the subscription now and the different companies and production is getting deals with Amazon and all these other companies.
It's just strange,
Hulu, it's just like, it's huge. They could see the product that they've never seen before here that we've had for like decades.
Yeah.
And now they could stream it and watch it online.
Because only some things got over there. Just like usually these huge action blockbuster movies is what goes internationally.
Yeah.
The stuff that does well here doesn't, it's way different. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's weird how this whole process is with entertainment. To me, sometimes I'm like, what? They're doing what? Yeah. They do it
and
how?
Like I think the last Die Hard movie was shot in Eastern Europe or something like that because Bruce Willis is huge
over there.
Over there, so like those movies are geared towards those audiences now.
That's crazy.
And so that's why you see it in the movie. You're like, why are they in China? And they're like, that's why they're in China.
We need Disney, Alfred. You need Disney. Disney is your friend.
Disney. I don't even know the chairman, but we can definitely have lunch.
They own everything.
Disney.
That's God. Just ask God.
Disney. It's a perfect marriage, Disney and God.
It really is. No, it really is. Have you ever seen a character that you were like, I would have been great for that, and a voice didn't work for it? I mean, I'm sure it happens. That's an honest question.
Yeah, that's almost like every movie that came out in the last 10 years. Not like stop.
No, but what, you know, everybody feels that, but you have a very specific
I think, because when I watch films and television shows and such, I see those characters and those actors playing those characters, and they're doing great, you know, and I believe everybody deserves an opportunity, a chance, and when you're truly gifted, you'll have your time to shine in the moment, you know, of your performance. But I've seen certain films. I've said, well, I could have played that role.
We have a caller right now.
Oh, who's the caller?
I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Hello?
Hello?
Welcome to Wake Up Hollywood.
Thank you.
Did you have a question?
Yes, I did. I had a question for Alfred Tompkins.
Yes, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? My name is Michael. I want to know, how did you get into to voiceovers and acting?
Well, I got into voiceovers and acting early on some years ago, early on in my career. I was discussing earlier how I was asked to do a theater play, The Voice of God. And from there, that night, I was asked to do another play playing The Voice of God, the Macaulay Theater. And from there, it grew, you know, and I started to pay attention to the gift and the talent, start working hard towards it, start recording some voiceover pieces, you know, picking up magazines and reading advertising ads and just saying it, you know, and just saying it how I think it would like to be sold. So I did that. And of course, you know, got acting classes and start perfecting the class and the skill and the talent of it, and just kept growing, you know, just kept growing at my talent, just believing in myself and working hard.
Oh, that's cool. I have another question if that's possible.
Yeah, go for it.
Yes, of course.
Okay. I heard you guys talking about anime earlier. I'm a big anime fan. Would you do anime?
Oh, well, some independent projects I did anime. Of course, growing into the animation areas of film and television, you have to grow into the markets of them. You have to grow into the producers' sessions of them. And it's a different world than acting. You know, acting and voiceover has two different casting directors, two different production companies, two different studio arrangements. So, and production deals for that matter. So right now, just working on building more of the resume to do more animated work, getting that work across.
All right. Cool. All right. Thanks for taking my call, you guys.
Of course.
Hey, thanks for listening. Anytime. Have a good night.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was awesome. Man, so, he was like picking your brain. He was
there,
like,
you go.
How do we do this? Well, Alfred, you've been a wonderful guest, man, and we want to thank you so much for coming on board.
Hey, thank you
being
for
a part of our
me.
Train of an episode.
Yeah. Oh my goodness!
Thanks, Alfred.
You got to come back because that voice just has
bring
to
God back. Bring God back.
Well, we got to have some hot chocolate.
Well, real quick before we wrap up, where can people find you? What's the best place people can find you for work or to ask
you
questions?
You can find me. You can Google me online, Alfred Reuben Thompson, or you can go to
spell it out because people are dumb. Let's be honest.
AlfredRubinThompson, as in Paul, S-O-N. Or you can go to www.alfredrubinthompson.com.
Or the longest website address ever.
One of the longest, but very gratifying when you go there.
Worth the typing.
Alfred Reuben Thompson on Facebook. Art Worldwide 203 on Twitter. Instagram, Alfred Reuben Thompson.
Right on.
Definite.
All right, Alfred.
Well, on behalf of Eddie Pence and myself, as well as Alfred.
Eddie.
And the voice of God.
And the voice of God.
And Die Hard 5.
Lethal Weapon.
Five.
Lethal Weapon 8.
Lethal Weapon 5.
It's going to happen.
We'll see you next week, y'all.
Warner Brothers.